What's going on? Welcome in to the Bearcast on Sikkim365.com. I'm your host, Grayson Grunhafer, and today we have a lot to discuss from Ashton Hawkins returning for Baylor football for the 2025 season to basketball suffering a defeat against Houston and also a season-ending injury to Josh O. We have a big mailbag to discuss. We'll get into all of that throughout the show today. Obviously, the big news of the week, though, is the Ashton Hawkins news. This is a big-time addition for Baylor going into this next upcoming season. I mean, when you think about it, and I reported on Sikkim365 some of the names that Baylor was trying to get in on right during the transfer portal process. And most of those guys were these, kind of bigger receivers, big frames, could win on the outside, were anticipated to be star outside receivers. That's kind of what Baylor was looking for. And I think that was very apparent and an obvious need because the only one they really had returning was Josh Cameron. And now you kind of look around and you go, okay, they didn't necessarily go out and find that kind of alpha wide receiver in the transfer portal, but they found it on their own roster. And Ashton Hawkins is a guy who had such a great year last year, came in with Jake Spavital, had a ton of familiarity with the air raid scheme, and that was huge for him. It allowed him to really come in and establish himself as one of the go-to guys in the offense this past year, pretty much Baylor's second-best wide receiver behind Josh Cameron for the large part of this season, and really came through for them in some big games this year. I think in general, though, I don't think it's a direct, okay, he replaces exactly what Baylor needs on the outside. But what I do think it is, it gives them more options. And they got Cole Wilson, they got Kobe Prentice. That gives them options there, right? They can move these guys in, they can move them outside, move them in the slot, see where they're best at. I think if you go through kind of their profiles, Cole Wilson has played the most on the outside, but he did come to Baylor, in my eyes at least, to play the slot wide receiver position. And then Ashton Hawkins, his most of his success has come in the slot, even though he did play outside in a few games this past year. His biggest kind of work shares on the outside were the Texas Tech game and the Oklahoma State game, in which he played very well in both of those games. And he kind of had to move around a little bit when Baylor started to suffer some injuries to Ketron Jackson and Hal Presley, and he stepped up and played well and proved that he can do it. That also allows them to test out Kobe Prentice on the outside as well to see, can he truly win on the outside? Can he get off the line? Can he win in contested catch situations? That's to be determined, as he's played a ton of slot during his time at Alabama, and now he's at Baylor. Now, let's also not forget about the guys on the roster, right? They're still going to look around at, kind of moving these guys around too. A guy that I'm looking at is Jaden Porter. I think he's one who could definitely play in the slot. I think that's where he initially profiled the best, but he did get some reps at outside receiver this year. And I know in practices as well, he got reps at outside receiver. So he'll be one to watch also competing in this rotation. And then, of course, they got this really good freshman class with Taz Williams, Ashton Jones, a few other guys, Chase Collier, Ja'Cory Watson, that could factor in as well. Taz, in my eyes, has the biggest opportunity there to step in and actually get a role in this offense in his first season. But of course, he's trying to come back from an injury that sidelined him for basically his entire senior season of high school football. Aside from that, Baylor will still have an opportunity after spring football to try to figure out if they want to take another receiver. I think I probably would. They still have some depth concerns there. They're really trying to stack great recruiting classes on great recruiting classes at the position, but they didn't do that for a few years. And because of that, there's still a clear hole on the roster. So getting a guy with multiple years of eligibility who could come in and potentially contribute this year, but really is looked at as a guy who can absolutely contribute next year, I think would be the thing that is still a possibility for Baylor, especially if the numbers increase from a scholarship standpoint, if guys decide to leave after spring ball and kind of figuring out, where they are on the roster. I think the other part about this that is just so intriguing is, you kind of look at what Ashton Hawkins has done in his career, how many games he's played and how many reps he's taken. I think that's some of the biggest things. So let's go through some numbers on Ashton Hawkins. Past 4 years, he's got 2,312 yards receiving, 16 touchdowns. He has played in 46 games. That is 3 seasons at Texas State, 1 season at Baylor. That's really good production. And it's really been 3 straight years of just high usage and production. And that is great to see. That really gives you a safe floor at the wide receiver position to have a guy like that come in and really be productive. A couple intriguing numbers that I think are very important when you kind of look at evaluating this move. He had 12 contested catch targets this season, and he had a team high 8 receptions in contested catch situations. That's exactly what they're looking for. They need guys that Sawyer Robertson can throw jump balls to, and they can actually go make plays on the football. Josh Cameron provides some of that. But when you look at this team last year, Ashton was actually the best in those situations, which bodes well to his ability to play on the outside because he does have an enormous catch radius. You know, he's got long arms, he's got really good hands, he's got a good ability and feel when it comes to the position, and great body control. You put that all together, it does give you an opportunity to actually win on the outside in those type of situations. And I mean, the proof is there from what he did this past year. 29 first down receptions, which is only second to Josh Cameron. I think the big thing for me there, first downs are huge. You know, not all catches are equal. Touchdowns, first downs obviously mean a whole lot more. Explosive plays, things like that. But he has a clear knack for getting to the first down marker, and also the trust with Sawyer Robertson. I think that's a big part of this as well. A lot of those first downs come in situations where you absolutely need a catch. Ashton was a guy he looked at and trusted. That's a big deal. Then there's this next one, 272 yards after the catch, which again is only behind Josh Cameron. That was something Baylor really struggled with the past few years until last season. They didn't have guys that could catch the football, make a guy miss, and get extra yards down the field. We saw Josh Cameron become great at that this past year. And then we saw a lot of that from Ashton Hawkins. That ability to make the first guy miss and get an extra 5 yards, get an extra 30 yards, get, you know, those big plays, that's how you get them, by making the first guy miss. He absolutely showed that. I think that's another huge piece of this for this roster, especially when you look at guys like Kobe Prentice and Cole Wilson, who kind of profile as guys who, you know, can catch that short yardage pass and take it for a big gain. To have more options like that is really intriguing. I think can take this offense to another level. He was fourth on the team in snaps out wide. So again, he's kind of proven that he can play out there when asked to, which gives them more options, more versatility, more flexibility with all the guys on their roster to just kind of try things out. If it doesn't work, you can put Ashton out there and you feel pretty good about it. He had 62 targets last year, which was second most on the team behind Josh Cameron. And then a big area for Ashton, and this is kind of one of those areas that I do think speaks to him being more of a slot receiver and also being a guy that you kind of want to be in the slot. You know, I'm not going to say that you have to, because again, he's proven it out wide, but this kind of production across the middle of the field is why you really like him at the slot wide receiver position. When you look over the middle of the field, he caught 29 of 37 passes for 344 yards and a touchdown. I mean, that's just massive production across the middle of the field. That's the kind of thing that you saw this year when teams really tried to take away the outside. You know, when they tried to take away the Hal Presleys, take away the Josh Camerons, a lot of times they just got beat over the middle of the field, and it was some of Michael Trigg and then a lot of Ashton Hawkins. And that 344 yards on throws across the middle of the field and that kind of efficiency, 29 of 37, is really, really good. I think that speaks to the fact that in certain situations where they need yardage, he's probably going to move into the slot because of that trust factor with Sawyer Robertson. Again, this is a guy that just gives them a ton of options. There's proven production there. There's a relationship with Sawyer Robertson. They know each other's game, and that's only going to grow in year number two. I don't know that. Like, you look through the portal and you look at the guys that maybe they could have landed, I think you can obviously make the case from a upside talent standpoint, NFL talent standpoint, maybe one of the other guys could have been better. And it definitely would have been more of a high ceiling type play. But I think for the safe floor of this team to make sure that this offense is as good or better than last year, getting a guy that is a proven commodity in the offense, bringing back a third guy who has done it before in this offense with Sawyer. They already got Josh Cameron. They got Michael Trigg, and now you have Ashton Hawkins. That is three proven pass catchers for Sawyer Robertson. I just think that gives this offense such a safe floor, allows this pass game to continue to grow from a continuity standpoint. I mean, I think also from looking at the Baylor staff, it's like you know exactly what Ashton Hawkins can do. Right, you go out and bring in another guy, you don't exactly know what he can do. You're kind of taking some risks there because you haven't been around that guy for years. You haven't developed that guy. He hasn't been in your offensive scheme. There's some adjustments there. But with Ashton, you know exactly what you're getting. You know what role he can fill. And I think that just makes this such a safe addition and a big addition for Baylor going into the 2025 season. It's huge. It was the story of the week, and an absolutely huge story for the Bears as this offense is now just kind of ready to go. You look at the offensive line that they bring back, the running backs, the quarterback, the pass catchers. I mean, this team is absolutely ready to go. Now it's just about, you know, building on it. And we've heard Jake Spavital talk about this pretty simple fact that year number two is when things really get rolling. Well, year number two and returning this many guys, I'm sure he is very, very excited for what Baylor's offense has in store in 2025. Okay, let's move on to the next topic on the list today, which is Baylor men's basketball. So this was an interesting week. They beat UCF, which that's a good win. You know, being UCF, UCF's not great this year by any means, but they are a pretty good basketball team, and they have shown signs of being explosive, especially on the offensive side of the court. Baylor beat them on Saturday, 91-76. And I think there were some storylines here because Langston Love returned. You had Jeremy Roach back again. And then you had the injury to Josh O. So a lot of storylines that came from that game. And really, I think it was good and bad, right? Because you saw Langston Love score 16 points, have six rebounds, really be a factor in that game and provide kind of exactly what they've needed from him, right? Because you need the versatility that he provides. He's a big, strong guard. There's a physicality there from a rebounding standpoint and just from honestly understanding the game, understanding the defense, understanding the offense. All of these things are very important and something that Baylor's been missing all year long. But then you also lose Josh O early on in the game. I think it was like 5 minutes into the game. You know, Josh O gets injured, brutal injury. It comes out later that he is done for the season. That's tough. That's really tough. We've talked about how thin Baylor has been down low with their bigs. And now it's really just Norchad Omier. You got Jalen Celestine that's going to be playing again, kind of that four role, but is going to have to play a lot of minutes at, you know, the 4-5 now the rest of the way. Isn't going to really get any chances at minutes at the three anymore. You're going to have Langston Love have to play some minutes at the four. It really is just kind of this approach of, you know, get a bunch of guys out there, sub them in and out, rotate these guards, hope these guards are able to knock down shots and really propel them. But we kind of got a sample of it against Houston. And I want to be clear here before we talk about the Houston game. You know, Houston's a really good team. I mean, they're number three in KenPom. They have the number six offense, number three defense in the country. They're really, really good. So there wasn't much thought that Baylor was actually going to go in and win this game, especially after losing Josh O. Because, I mean, when you look at Houston, they're so physical. They have big guys that have been there for a long time. They wear on you from a defensive standpoint. And they really did run away in this game from Baylor. I know the final score is only 11, but they really felt like they were, you know, 15-plus points better than Baylor all night long. But Baylor, again, at the end of the game, was able to score some late points and make it look a little bit better than it was. I think in general, though, some of the things that really stood out, I mean, Houston really got whatever shots they wanted. They shot 51% from the floor, 42% from three. And it was just kind of this, you know, a bunch of different guys scored for them. And they got a ton of production off their bench, which I'm going to get to here in a second. But Houston scores 24 points from their bench and really gets reliable efforts from multiple guys. And then you look at Baylor, you know, Jaden Nunn and Jalen Celestine play 38 combined minutes and they combine 0 of 7 with 1 point. And even worse than that, 1 assist and just 3 rebounds. Those guys did not play well enough. And if you're going to make up for the loss of Josh O, you have to have these guys off the bench have productive games and give you something, or else you're relying way too much on your starters. I mean, Langston Love played 36 minutes in his second game back. And yes, I know he's going to have to play those kind of minutes, but still, if you're getting a good performance from Celestine or Nunn, you're able to, you know, maybe put that to 30. And same with, you know, Norchad playing 37, VJ playing 37 minutes. I mean, a lot of that is just, it's tough to ask. You would like to, you know, take a few more minutes away from them if you can get guys that are actually, you know, performing and playing well. They did not in this game. And it's been a few games that have kind of gone that way from a bench perspective for Baylor. And that's a problem. I mean, you go back to the Texas Tech game. It was, again, 0 bench points, and they lost it 13-0 when it comes to bench points there. Obviously, in the UCF game, that was a little bit different, but they were able to play more guys, get more guys in, and Nunn, Celestine, and Love played really well. But that's a very different kind of matchup, as UCF's one of the worst defensive teams in the Big 12. We saw them against a good team in Houston, and they struggled from a defensive standpoint. They were okay offensively, but again, just not enough when your bench guys are underperforming to that level. So now what? You know, where's Baylor at here? I think the first place that I think is important to start, versus KenPom top 15 teams, Baylor has not performed well enough all year long. And yes, they've had injuries. Yes, Langston's been out for a lot of the year. Jeremy Roach has been out some. They're missing guys. I understand that. But the proof is just kind of what you've put on your schedule so far. And against top 15 teams, here's how they've performed. Lost Gonzaga by 38, to Tennessee by 15, to Iowa State by 19, to Arizona by 11, to Texas Tech by 14, and to Houston by 11. The proof is kind of there that when they face these really good teams away from home, they're going to struggle. And those teams can really attack Baylor's weaknesses much more than other teams, which, yes, is obvious because they are really good teams. But I think it's also just deeper than that, that when you get into the tournament and Baylor's sitting at, you know, kind of an 8 or a 9 right now, I think they will have a chance to move up as we get, you know, closer to that point. They have some very winnable games coming up. But again, I mean, you see yourself as a, if you find yourself as an 8 or a 9 or a 7 or something along those lines, you're going to face a really good team in the second round. And Baylor just hasn't really shown that they're going to compete against those kind of teams very well so far this year. Their best wins when it comes to on the road or neutral wins, it's, you know, number 41, Arkansas by 5. St. John's, who is number 16, is the best win of the year. They won that game in double overtime on a buzzer beater by Jeremy Roach. They got a win over Arizona State in overtime. It's just not a lot of great signs when you look at this team so far when they have left Waco. And I think that that is something that is really troubling when you talk about an NCAA tournament where all the games are neutral site games. They really need to show up over these next few weeks here as the season's coming to a close and get some confidence on the road. Get some confidence away from Foster Pavilion. Get some confidence just that they can actually go somewhere else and win these kind of games. Now, they're not going to have a lot of opportunities against good teams to go win these games, but doing it even against the bad teams, which they've shown some of that this year. We talked about the Arizona State one, the Utah one. They compete against BYU. But actually going out and winning a few more of those games, maybe even decisively, I think could go a long ways from a confidence standpoint for this team. There's no doubt there's some troubles here. I don't really think they have an answer to make up for the loss of Josh O. You saw their rotation in the Houston game. It's clear that they don't have a lot of faith in anyone else. They have 7 guys that it looks like they're going to rely on right now. And I think that just means they're going to have to try to outscore teams. They're going to have to try their best to just create havoc, get in passing lanes, create some turnovers, allow their guards to get out in space with those turnovers. And then offensively, you know, try to attack mismatches there. If other teams decide to go big, be able to attack those mismatches with the 3-point shot, with quickness, with speed, get into the lane, drive and kick, which is something they weren't really able to do against Houston. Houston did a really good job of not allowing Baylor to get inside the paint That's something that I really do think they're going to have to improve upon. And really, you know, Houston, obviously a great defensive team. They did a really good job on Rob Wright, just not allowing him to navigate the paint as easily as he has against some teams. I think you're going to see that open up in some of these future matchups. Rob Wright's a fantastic player, VJ, of course. And I think these other guys like Langston Love, you saw his strength and ability to get to the lane, but you also saw, you know, his feet still aren't quite under him yet. You saw him fall a few times, and I think that's just all part of it, right? All part of the process of returning to play, playing 36 minutes, like that's going to come. But I think to me, watching him play, you can absolutely see that he is a difference maker for this team. Now, without Josh O there, how much does he become a difference maker, right? Because if Josh O's there, I fully believe that he could have helped this team really have a nice run at the end of the year. But without Josh O, there's going to be even more on his plate. And we'll see if he can absolutely elevate this team, take him to another level with his play, and hopefully with some of the other guys continuing to play well and perform well. But there is no doubt here that this is a significant loss and something that Baylor's going to have to try to find a way to get back together, figure out a way to make up for that loss. And this stretch coming up provides a lot of opportunities to kind of make up for that. You look at their first game coming up is the West Virginia game. They're number 44 in the country. I think the biggest thing for West Virginia, though, is they're 104th on the offensive side. That got even worse with the loss of Tucker DeVries. That is not a good offensive team. That's a team that Baylor should be able to handle from a defensive standpoint. West Virginia is pretty good on the defensive side. But again, I think when you look at Foster Pavilion, I think Baylor's not going to have many trouble scoring against just about anyone at home, or at least they shouldn't for the most part. We've seen them, you know, occasionally struggle, but I think in general, their offense is really good at home. I fully expect them to take advantage of that, beat West Virginia, and I think that's a game that could propel them for this run. They got Arizona at home, at Colorado, at Cincinnati, Oklahoma State, at TCU, and then Houston. So really, when you look at that run, there's not a lot of opportunities to, or I guess there's this mixture, right? There's some mixtures of opportunities to improve your resume, Arizona and Houston being those two. You really would like to win one of those because I think ultimately, if they win one of those games, I think it could be the difference in an entire seed line. So when it comes to bracketology, if they have one of those wins, they might end up being, you know, a 7 or a 6 instead of an 8 or a 9. They need to find a way to win one of those at home. If they win both of them, that would be massive for this team and for this season. But on the flip side, right, they got these games that just feel like must wins. I mean, Colorado's number 106, according to KenPom. Cincy's 53. Oklahoma State's number 100, and then TCU's number 87. I mean, you start losing, you know, one or two of these games, and it's going to really collapse your resume. So a big stretch coming up here. They got to find a way to get on a run, build some momentum going into the Big 12 tournament, and then, of course, the NCAA tournament. If they actually want to do some damage in March, we'll see. I mean, I think this is a long season. This is a season that has had so many ups and downs. And yes, losing Josh O is not good. And it's not something that, you know, you want to happen. Definitely not saying that. But I think if Baylor can stay healthy the rest of this way, potentially, you know, because they're already having to make up for losing Josh O, but now hopefully they can gain some stability. And I know that's a lot of wishful thinking, I would say, because of, you know, how many injuries they've had this year. But if this group can stay playing together for the next 3 weeks and continue to build, learning what they need to do, you know, with the roster that they have, I think it could allow them to have some cohesiveness towards the end of the year. Because right now, that's what they're dealing with. They can't get any cohesiveness because it's guys shuffling in and out of the lineup. It's trying to figure out the best roster construction for each game, the best lineup changes to make. I just think in general, there's a lot of indecisiveness right now because you haven't had a full team available. So if they can keep this team fully available and healthy, again, I think you could see them playing their best basketball at the end of the year. I do think that that is a big could because they could absolutely. I think based on what we've seen, they could collapse as well. I think that there is some reasons to think that could happen. But I also think there's reasons to think they could win, you know, quite a few more of these games and actually play some pretty good basketball at the end of the year. But I do think that is still very much to be determined. Okay, let's move on to the mailbag for this week. So I'm actually going to go back a couple weeks. I got some questions just asking if we were going to answer some of the questions that we had been asked from a few weeks ago. So I am going to go back and answer those along with the questions that I got asked this week. So let's dive into this mailbag. We'll start with Mort Dog. A scheduling question. I see we're playing Cincinnati this year. We played there in 2023. Is there any particular reason we're playing at away again? I think just with the overall construction of the schedule, they had to play another game away on it to make it work, and it just happened to be Cincinnati. It is kind of weird. Definitely kind of weird that that's what's happening, but I think in general, they probably had to do this more than you think. I'm sure there's other teams that are kind of having to do the same thing. It just so happens that Baylor's matchup is against Cincinnati in that away slot. So I'm sure there's some moving around there, but I'm sure it's a little more common than you would think. Okay, next question from Wyatt Smith. Out of all the new transfers, who are you most excited to see develop this spring? I think develop is the key word here, because you look around, there's a lot of guys who I think are more proven commodities. And so, you know, development is a little bit different for them. But I think the guy that I think it's most important that he develops is Samu Taumanu-Pepe, the big Texas A&M nose tackle transfer. They're expecting him to come in and anchor the defensive line this year. That means he's going to have to play a whole lot more than he's ever played so far in his career. That's a big ask. But I do think if he comes in and develops and turns into that anchor that they need in the middle of their defensive line, I think it completely changes their defense. So he's the one that I'm going to go with there. I know Sawyer is QB1. How far behind is Walker White? I think that's a question that we probably won't know much about until spring ball concludes. I mean, he's definitely not QB1. Sawyer is. I think this year is about learning for Walker and about growing as a player and as just a guy who's looking to take that step in the right direction and potentially be the guy of the future for Baylor. I think that's what this is all about. But yeah, he's behind him. I mean, look at what Auburn did. They brought in Jackson Arnold. So they felt like Jackson Arnold was better than Walker White. I think that's an important note because I view Sawyer as being, you know, quite a bit better than Jackson Arnold at this point in their careers. But yeah, I think in general, Walker is a good player, but he is significantly behind Sawyer from a game rep standpoint, from an accuracy standpoint, from a command of the offense standpoint. Those are areas that he's going to improve upon. And I think as we get closer to the fall, that gap will shrink some. How much is to be determined, though? And he's still going to have to win a battle over Nate Bennett and Edward Griffin for that backup role. But I do think that it's an intriguing question, but one that, again, I don't think we're going to get much answers to until we actually hit spring ball, because we haven't seen him get very many reps in a live game nor in a Baylor uniform yet. Who from the current commits was the biggest recruiter at Baylor Junior Day trying to bring others on board? Easily Quinn Murphy. He's been their biggest recruiter in the class, but they're all doing a little bit of that. I think you'll see more of that with London Smith and Jamarian Vincent now added, but Quinn Murphy is definitely the guy there. Out of the two new position coaches, who do you think will have the biggest impact / growth in their room this season? I'm going to go with Paul Gonzalez. I just trust, you know, kind of what he's done in the past at TCU. I think that he's really going to get a lot out of these guys. I think the physicality is going to improve. The technique's going to improve. And it's a group that needs it. There's some talent there. The addition of Calvin Simpson-Hunt's a big one. They got Caden Jenkins. They got Tevin Williams. They got, you know, some guys that played some last year with Reggie Bush and LeVar Thornton. You got some new guys like Leo Almanza. They have guys in the room. They really just need to be developed. And I think Paul is going to do a really good job of that. Bears always win. Ashton Hawkins status. Well, he is now solidified as he is coming back to Baylor. You also asked, what room do we have in the portal? I would like to take an outside receiver if available, but also still want to bring in a corner. Thanks for the work, guys. Well, thank you. Bears always win. Yeah, I think they could still take a portal receiver, but as I mentioned earlier in the show, I do think that if they take one, it'll be a guy with multiple years, maybe not necessarily a guy that you're thinking is going to be, you know, an alpha this year. I think that's the you know, that was filled by Ashton Hawkins. And so I think that's kind of what you're left with, right? Is now, okay, do we want to add a guy that kind of allows this room to grow, gives them a chance to be really good next year? You're kind of getting a guy based on potential, right? And trying to fill in some missed classes. I think that's where you would go add another wide receiver. I don't think you're going to add one that's a senior, but I mean, maybe Baylor feels like, hey, you know, if so-and-so enters the portal, this would be the perfect fit for our offense and take it to another level. That's possible as well, as they've really, you know, they've been looking at the wide receiver position a ton, but I think Ashton Hawkins returning really alleviates the concerns there. Doc Crowell, who of the junior day visits excited you the most and why? Excited me the most. That's a good question. You know, I think that, you know, bringing in the guys that they did, they brought in so many really, really good and highly impactful guys. And that makes it kind of tough. I think you look at a guy like Javian Osborne, the running back, a really good prospect, really basically an elite prospect with an elite offer list. They lost Davis Penn and then they immediately got him on a junior day visit. That excites me a lot, especially with what we've seen from this offense and their ability to run the football. Getting a difference maker there would be huge. Jordan Clay, I think, is a super exciting one. I feel like we've talked about him a ton out of San Antonio Madison, another four-star wide receiver, a really good player, a guy that I've talked a lot about. He reminds me a ton of, you know, kind of that mold of a Michael Pittman Jr. or a Vincent Jackson, that kind of mold, big, strong, physical wide receiver with a strong frame that allows him to create yards after the catch, big, strong hands. I mean, that's what he reminds me of, and that just, I think, plays really well in this offense. When you look at a guy like Josh Cameron, who's really kind of turning into that, I think Jordan Clay's going to have that pretty early on in his career. Those are a few guys on the offensive side. I think defensively, you know, a guy like DeQuiz Beck out of Carthage, I think he's a really interesting prospect and one that Baylor is really working on and really, you know, putting themselves in a much better position for than I think we initially thought before the junior day visit. Now I think they're in a better spot. South Oak Cliff linebacker Jamarian Phillips is probably my favorite linebacker that Baylor's heavily recruiting right now. He's right up there. I really like his game. His productivity is elite. A ton of sacks, a ton of tackles for loss, just the kind of player that really fits well in a Dave Aranda defense, has a very good offer list as well. So I like him as I like him too. And then the final one, how about Donovan Webb, a guy who's just, his offer list is growing by the day, a really, really good secondary prospect, a guy who can really cover. And I think that's something that there's been this kind of disconnect in my eyes with what Baylor has been looking at the safety position. And, you know, some of the guys that they've brought in, it just feels like, man, you know, are they trying to move him to linebacker? You know, is he truly a safety that's going to lock down the backside of the defense and really not give up big plays, be able to cover the slot, be able to cover speedy, shifty receivers? They really haven't, you know, brought in a ton of guys like that. And so I think a guy like Donovan Webb would give you that flexibility. I think he could be a field safety. I think he could guard guys in the slot. I think he would take away the top half of the defense from the opposing offense. I think he's just one of those guys that might end up becoming one of the more important guys in this class if they're able to land him, just because they don't have a lot of guys like him on the roster, and they haven't recruited a lot of guys like him for the roster. So he's one that I'm very high on, and I think it is one I'm very, very excited about. How did they orchestrate the greatest junior day in memory? I mean, they just continue to recruit guys, continue to push for them, continue to try to get guys on campus, continue to try to build relationships. I mean, that's what this staff has been doing. And I mean, we saw it with the 2025 class, and now, you know, with this 2026 class, after a really good season in which they won some games, gained some momentum, it allows you to get these kind of guys on campus. I mean, you know, I mentioned the guys I'm most excited about, but, you know, turning around and Jamarian Carlton's on campus, KJ Ford's on campus, Jamian Winfield's on campus. I mean, this is just one of those things that is rare and not something that I've seen from a Baylor junior day ever. It was the best list I have ever seen for Baylor junior day. I don't even necessarily think it is all that close. It was phenomenal. And then you walk away from it And I wrote, you know, a big article about kind of where I'm at with a lot of the different prospects that visited. And Baylor gained a lot of momentum. We saw it with the Jamarian Vincent commitment. We saw it with the London Smith commitment. But there's more coming. Just be ready. There is much more coming. Baylor is in a position to continue to recruit at a very high level and continue to build out this 2026 recruiting class. Any estimate about how many high schoolers they may take in the 2026 class? I don't really have that estimate yet. I think really I need to figure out, you know, kind of what does this roster look like after the spring? Because I think that's going to be very telling as far as what spots they have left. Of course, once you get to the fall as well, you see how many transfers they bring in, kind of how they're, you know, dealing with various, you know, scholarship differences from what they've had in the years past with the scholarship growth, what they're doing with walk-ons, all of those things. It's kind of hard to guess right now. I normally put it kind of as a, just a safe estimation around that, you know, 21, 20 type number. That sounds about right for now. That could grow or shrink. We'll see kind of how things progress. I don't expect them to take any less than, you know, 18, 19 guys though. And I think the class could get as big as, you know, 27, 28, potentially, depending on how things shake out. McLean Stadium. Will Baylor have the top ranked recruiting class in the Big 12 by 2026 or 2027? Great question. I think this is the year where they have a really good chance to end up as the top ranked recruiting class. I think they're going to push for it. We'll see what, you know, schools like Texas Tech and TCU do. But I think 2026, there's a chance here. Sure, why not? I'll say that they'll have the best recruiting class in the Big 12 for the 2026 season, which I think means they're probably going to have to be right on that fringe of a top 25 class, potentially inside the top 25. We'll see how that all plays out. That's a little bit of a ways in the future, but that's just kind of my overall prediction, just because I do think they're going to have a really successful year and they're going to be able to utilize that on the recruiting trail. Okay, next question. Alpha Needle. My wife and kids tell me I look and act like Bill Self. Should I take this as a compliment or a dig? I mean, you know, I don't really pay that much attention to Bill Self. I know during games he can sometimes get a little riled up. So yeah, I mean, I don't know. I don't know if you coach your kids or anything like that and get, you know, really red and get really, you know, upset and start yelling, then maybe there's something to that. I will say, you know, Bill Self in general, I think he's a pretty, you know, level-headed guy. When you hear him not during a basketball game, he seems like he's very knowledgeable and seems like a fine dude to talk to or whatnot. But yeah, I would take it. I would take it probably as a compliment, as long as they're not talking about it in the context of, you know, whining and yelling at the refs on the sideline of a game. I'd probably take it as a compliment. Next question, Ryan Allen Long. Now that the NFL season is over, let's talk NFL draft. Who from Baylor has NFL draft aspirations? Well, Steve Linton got invited to the NFL Combine, so I think it's pretty clear he's going to get drafted. Garmin Randolph, Campbell Barrington, Matt Jones are all guys that I fully expect to get on an NFL roster. I don't know if they'll get drafted, but it's possible. A couple of the receivers, you look at Hal Presley, Ketron Jackson, Monterey Baldwin, I could see them potentially being on a team and competing to try to make an NFL roster. Trevin Mai as well. But yeah, as far as draft picks go, I think the main one that I'm looking at right now is Steve Linton. And then you're just kind of hoping that another guy kind of finds his way in there. We'll see on that. But yeah, it's not going to be a huge draft class, but it will be, I think, a little bit better than the year before. And then the next year, next season, I think you'll have quite a few more guys that end up in this kind of conversation going into the 2025 season. Doc Crowell, to repeat the question. Oh, I answered those just a minute ago. A useless Kim degree. Does the tournament selection committee take into account preseason expectations? If not, should they? It's hard to watch this team thinking of how high the expectations were and seriously considered them as a tournament team. So many blowout losses. No, the committee does not take into account preseason expectations. It is literally what your resume looks like, how many quad one wins you have, you know, how many quad four losses you have. You know, it's your good losses, your bad, you know, the bad losses that you have on your resume, the good wins. It's all of those things are kind of taken into account, but not preseason expectations. And no, preseason expectations should not count at all. to where you end up in the NCAA tournament. It's all about your body of work, because so many teams come into the season with a lot of hype, and so many teams do end up floundering and not being, you know, not being the guy, not being the team that everyone thought they were. I think Baylor's kind of in that boat, unfortunately, this year. And, you know, I still think, again, that they can be more competitive and be better as the season ends. But I think it's pretty clear they're not that real Final Four contender that I think some people thought they would be. You know, I kind of thought that this team was going to be really good, you know, thinking that they could be, you know, potentially a Final Four team if everything hit right. I think early on in the season, you pretty much saw that, okay, this team's ceiling is probably the Sweet 16, and I still feel that way. And even saying the Sweet 16 is probably a little bit of a stretch, especially if they end up with, you know, an 8-9 or a 7 seed in which you're playing a really good team in the second round. It's kind of hard to picture them winning that game, but who knows? Crazier things have happened. Teams get hot, and teams deal with injuries. So we'll see what happens as the season goes on. Next up, Bear are cool. 1, 2, 3, 4. Question for the pod. How would you grade the off season so far? I really like what Baylor's done this off season. I mean, you look at the positions that they've addressed. They were all positions of need. They brought in some guys who are highly impactful and going to start from day one. They brought in some guys that have experience and proven commodities. They brought in guys who were former, you know, super highly rated recruits, which again, that ups your blue chip ratio in my eyes, or at least it should. You're getting 4-star, 5-star talent on campus that again, that's really tough for Baylor to land consistently through high school recruiting. It's getting better, but being able to bring in more guys like that and give yourself a chance at a really high ceiling, I think is very important for the program. I think in general, you know, bringing back Ashton Hawkins, bringing back all the guys they brought in. You know, you had, you know, random people from national media trying to talk about Jake Spavital and Sora Robertson leaving and going to Oklahoma. And obviously that didn't happen, which is huge for the program, right? You know, keeping these guys, keeping, you know, all the guys that you are counting on, being able to have those conversations with them in the offseason and talk about NIL and be, you know, speak the truth about, you know, kind of where things are at, and still have guys be happy and ready to go and ready to run it back with Baylor is huge. And I think it speaks to the health of the program and where the, it just kind of how these guys feel about Dave Aranda and the Baylor program as a whole. I think just in general, this has been a really good offseason. They made some good hires. They're recruiting really well. Yeah, I don't see how you couldn't give this an A. I really don't. You know, the kind of splashes that they made in the transfer portal, on the recruiting trail, solidifying the recruiting class. I just think in general that this has been a very, very good offseason for the Baylor program for this year and for years going forward with the recruiting stuff that they were able to do, signing the class, starting strong with 2026, bringing in some young guys through the transfer portal. I think it all really helped this program out in a big way. Next up, Wyatt Smith. Out of all the new transfers, who are you most... Oh, I answered that one already. GMAC. Scott Drew will probably need to make changes in how to fill out his roster for next season. If you're in his shoes, what changes would you make? Do we need to start thinking about building better depth to survive the injury bug? Thank you guys as always, Sikkim. You know, I think there's a lot of merit to that. You know, watching Houston last night and seeing them roll out three quality centers and basically making sure they have a quality big guy on the court at all times that can guard, rebound, protect the rim. That does make you look at the Baylor roster and go, man, they have like one of those guys. You know, they just don't have this bevy of athletic, strong, older centers that can come in and alleviate some of your problems on the defensive end and clean things up. You know, Norchad is undersized as well, so having to play him at center the entire game is not the most ideal thing. You know, obviously you can play him there in specific matchups, and you do like to play him there because, you know, he provides something different on the offensive end and it gives you a mismatch and things like that. But I think in general, you know, you want to have options, and they just don't have a lot of options now without Josh O. They have zero options. But I do think going forward, they need to figure out a way to build that kind of depth. And then I think the other area that is just very apparent is the just kind of you look around at the roster, they don't have a lot of length and they don't have a lot of size at the wing position or the guard position. So you're playing a lot of smaller guys, and it's hard, right? Because when you have a lot of smaller guys and they go up against athletic and long dudes on the other side, they can make life miserable for the Baylor guards. I think you've seen that some with, you know, Jeremy Roach. You saw it last night for Rob Wright. You know, the length of Houston really bothered him, and the size down low that Houston had at the rim bothered him. We've seen that some. And when you're unable to get around guys, get by guys, you're unable to get shots off quickly, you're worried as guys are contesting your shot that they're the length that's out there. I think those kind of things are huge. And then also from a defensive and rebounding standpoint, having guys who are a little bit taller, a little bit longer, it gives you more there, right? Gives you more opportunities for rebounds, makes switching a lot easier. I just think in general, you know, playing so many small guards is not exactly the recipe for success. And so they have a bunch of guys that are, you know, kind of in that same mold, right? When you look at Rob, Jeremy Roach, Jaden Nunn, I mean, that's a lot of small guards. And you're playing a lot of those guys. VJ is taller and longer. He's kind of fits more what I'm talking about, being, you know, 6'4", 6'5", long arms. And Langston too, to an extent, because he's more like 6'4", again, a little bit longer. And so I think that's kind of the area, right? And then you look around and you go, okay, Jalen Celestine is kind of the one that fits that wing forward position, but he's not very athletic. And so, yeah, he's tall and it helps some in rebounding, but then you'll have nights like last night where he's just a non-factor on the glass. And that's where having more guys that are that 6'7", 6'8" wing type that can dribble, rebound, play defense, give you more options on the defensive side from a switching standpoint or from a not switching standpoint. They need more of that. So the height, the length, the athleticism just needs to get better from Baylor, I think. And that's how I would probably address it, finding more guys like that. And I think they will. I really do. You know, bringing in Cameron Carr, we saw from Tennessee, that's a good one because he's more like, again, he's more like that 6'4", 6'5", long athletic guard, right? That can guard better, impact the game more on the defensive side and the rebounding side. I think all of that makes a lot of sense to find more guys like that, especially because next year, you know, you're bringing Rob Wright back. So you really need to have next to him some size, more size on the court. And I think that's what they're going to look for. I think that that's kind of the area that I would look at. And I think they're going to build towards that. I think you're going to see them do that. They bring in Tunde next season, their freshman. But again, he's more like a 6'6", 6'7". He's kind of that perfect wing that I'm talking about that can rebound and really wear on you physically. If they're able to bring back Asamoah and he improves, he would fit that as well. He just has to improve a lot. He hasn't shown me enough this year to think that that improvement is definitely coming. But I do think that if he takes that big step forward that we've seen from Baylor players in the past, he could be very impactful next year. Again, if he can actually, you know, grow into that. But finding some more guys like that, I think, is the key. That forward, wing, guard spot, getting bigger, longer, more athletic. And then, yeah, I would take some more depth pieces to make sure that this team has guys to replace guys if they aren't playing well, if they're injured. I think you see with Josh Oh getting injured this year, I mean, it's going to be really hard to count on him next year. So for me, I look at it and I go, I don't think Baylor has a single center on this roster. So they're going to have to take at least two transfers, in my opinion, at the center position that can actually rebound. You're probably going to have to take a couple forwards as well. This is going to be a different approach. And I'm actually really excited to see what they end up deciding to do when it comes to the transfer portal, because I could see them taking a bunch of pieces from the transfer portal and this being really kind of one of those more unique years for Scott Drew. And I think that's exciting, right? To see, you know, when he gets the opportunity to bring in a bunch of guys and spread out the resources, you know, where does he go? You know, what kind of guys does he target? Does he look at, you know, the mid-major teams? Does he continue to look for these, you know, high upside former top recruits? You know, where does he go? I think it's probably a mixture of those things, but I think finding the body types and the guys who fit what they want to do next year is the biggest thing. And in general, I mean, they got a couple guys who, if they come back next year, are big parts of this team. And now it's just about constructing a roster that really enhances those guys' abilities and also hides the team's weaknesses. I think that those two things, bringing those together, are the things that I think they kind of missed on this past year when it comes to the transfer portal. Okay, so that is it for this week. I will be back next week. I think Craig will be as well. He's dealing with a little bit of I think he's got the cold right now. So hopefully he gets better, but we'll be back talking some more Baylor basketball, potentially Baylor football, maybe some Baylor recruiting as well, as official visits are starting to get set up. But for the Bearcast on Sikkim 365, this has been Grayson Grunhafer. Thanks for listening.